Join Head Games Radio. Call 800-878-PLAY. That's 800-878-7529. And now, here's your host, Nick Lowry.
Welcome back to Head Games Radio. We're continuing to talk with our good friend Peter Roby, and we're joined by the undeniable, the irrepressible, the expressionistic Charles Barkley, my good friend. Thanks for joining us again. Maybe the third, fourth time you've been on the show, buddy.
No problem, man. How y'all doing today?
You know, today's show, Charles, is about you. It's all about you today because, you know, I am beginning to wonder whether you are the exception that proves the rule today in sports. When you see players that are being confronted by the media today, I wonder if they can follow your example or whether you just prove the fact that it's a once in a lifetime or certainly a very rare thing to have an athlete that can that's not afraid to express his opinion, because you can get away with it once or twice, but sooner or later it's going to bite you in the butt most of the time. You see guys that clam up eventually because they opened up and provided fodder for those media guys that want to create their own careers, want to create stories sometimes that really aren't fair or accurate, but in the name of their own jobs, they put this unfair spin on an athlete's comments. Why is it that you always felt comfortable speaking your mind?
Well, everybody can speak their mind, and I understand that I can't make everybody happy, and that's the way I'm going to do my thing. I mean, I accept one thing you got to understand, there's always one strike against you when you're rich and famous, because people, they're mad because they don't have your life. So you can't make everybody happy. So when I first started out in Philadelphia, you know, I tried to play the PR game, because that's all. When they say PR, that just means BS. And then I realized no matter what I said, people disagree with it. So I said, okay, I might as well say what I want to say. But the only reason I'm able to do that is I understand that I can't make everybody happy. No matter what you say, half the people are going to like it and half the people not going to like it. And athletes today are in a different situation. You know, they got so much power and may make so much money, they don't have to deal with the press. I hear guys all the time say they're not talking to the press. It wasn't like that in my day. We understood we were trying to make the game grow, and we had to talk to the press every day. But when you get $50, $60, $70, $100 million contract, guys don't have to talk to the press, you know, because you know, they're not really concerned about that.
What about a Chad Johnson and a Steve Smith and a Joe Horn and the guys that want to express themselves not just with what they say to the media but also just acting out on the field when they celebrate? Is that something you think that's related to your example of expressing yourself, or is that more kind of the dysfunctional childlike thing where somebody's saying, look at me?
No, I think the guys just having fun. I think to say it's dysfunctional, that's not fair. Guys have always danced and had fun. It's not dysfunctional. They're just trying to have fun. And obviously, you know, the NFL, I see now they're trying to cut down on that. I think the fans like it. You know, all the reporters talk about it. So it's kind of funny. That's the one thing I tell all my famous friends. Whether you do good or bad, all these asses in the media, they're going to make money on you. You got to understand that. If you do something good, they're going to make money on you. If you do something bad, they're going to make money on you. But I think those guys are just trying to have fun. Do I think they go overboard sometimes? Probably. But I think they're just trying to have fun. But the media, they're such hypocrites. They want to act like that's all they show. It's funny. Peter, I was watching ESPN the other day, and that's the main reason I do my own thing. You know, ESPN did this great thing on Sunday talking about athletes and gambling. First of all, more regular people gamble than jocks. And they were trying to say how bad it was. I said, first of all, more regular people gamble than jocks.
We gamble with our careers.
And first of all, ESPN is such hypocrites. They put the point spreads up there. They have guys picking games. And they show poker like there's no tomorrow. And that's the hypocrisy that goes on with the press and in sports. But the fans, sometimes they get so stupid, they don't understand how the game works. So they... You know, it's funny. They had this idiot here from Phoenix on there talking about how bad it was. Athletes gamble, number one, because they want to, and number two, it's fun. They can do that. They can't gamble on their own sport, but they can gamble if they want to. But it's just really funny how the fans get caught up in the hypocrisy with the media. The media make you think what they want you to think. You know, but the fans don't understand how the game works. They want to say, well, gambling's bad. Well, if it's that bad, why do y'all play up, what's the little fat guy picking games? Why do y'all have poker on every night? But see, the fans don't have, they don't understand the hypocrisy that goes on with the media.
What's interesting is we had Jimmy the Greek back in the day, and it wasn't the gambling that sunk him. It was his comment about the rise of the black athlete. Actually, I think it was on, you know, sort of like a Martin Luther King day
when he commented,
and that's what sunk him. It wasn't anything to do with his gambling.
Fired for that. And I was really glad. I think Bill Cosby and, I think Jesse Jackson came out and said he didn't deserve to be fired for that. But, you know, that's funny. I wish he hadn't got fired. But it's just funny how all these guys, first of all, if it wasn't for gambling, sports wouldn't be as popular as they were, especially football. You know, why they make such a big deal out of the injury report? You know, I mean, seriously, the one thing, these guys are such hypocrites. That's why I tell them, hey, I'm going to do my thing. If you like it, that's cool. If you don't like it, that's cool, too. And I get a kick. I have to listen to every little punk reporter in the world. Tell every great athlete every day how good or bad they are. Never played the sport. They're an expert on every sport. And these stupid, some of these idiots at home, like, ooh, it must be true. He said it. Why is it true? Because he said it. He's never touched a football, baseball, basketball.
Hey, Charles, but you're 6'6", 300 pounds, so maybe it's just a little bit easier for you to say it. And we want to get Pete Roby in on this discussion because, you know, is it possible for there to be other Charles Barkleys out there? Kurt Schilling certainly tries to express his mind, but there are not too many people out there. When Dennis Rodman did it, it was more of a joke. It was more about getting attention. When Terrell Owens does it, it's met with. Do you think Terrell is trying to be you? In other words, by being himself, is he trying to follow your lead?
Hey, man, I don't know. I don't speak for other people. I think T.O. really mishandled the situation in Philly. I think I love Donovan McNabb. I think he's a fantastic leader or organization. And I disagree with the way T.O. handled that situation. And, Nick, I don't speak for anybody else. I speak for Miss Barkley's favorite son. That's it.
And Nick, if I could just jump in there, I think you have to make the distinction between the kind of behavior that you see with an athlete like T.O. and the kind of things that Charles is talking about is that, you know, Charles had his opinions about things that had nothing to do with sport. He's talking about issues in life and society that, you know, he had a right to state his view. And as he said, there are going to be people that agreed with it and others that didn't. And, in, you know, when Charles made the comments many years ago about the fact that he wasn't a role model, what he was saying is that parents needed to talk to their kids about issues in life and not let some athlete shape what people's opinions were. And so we at Sport and Society, we certainly recognize the power and appeal and influence of sport. That's why we exist, to try to use that for good. But that when one of our messages to people all the time is, don't assume that you know an athlete just because you see them play the game and you admire them for their skill, and that you should, as adults in young people's lives, should be influencing your kids' lives by the things that you talk about across the dinner table every night. And there are certain athletes that feel like they're equipped to be able to speak their mind and talk with the media about any number of subjects. Charles was one of them. Not that everything Charles says is something that I agree with, but I respect the fact that he at least is willing to state his opinion and let it be how people will perceive it.
And Charles is willing to let me have my own opinion, too. And one of those is last week we talked about the psychology of these underdogs like George Mason, and we came to an interesting conclusion that part of what we are attracted to with the underdog is they refuse, whether they're women in sport, whether they're Charles Barkley, whether they're a small person, big person, whatever their context, whatever the environment they come out of, they refuse to let other people, whether it's the media or someone else, define who they are. Do you think that's basically why we love people that stick up for themselves, whether they're 4'2" or 6'6", 300 pounds, Charles?
Well, I think people love hearing a good story, but I think people really are not handling this George Mason thing that well. What I've been saying for the last 3 or 4 years, what you're seeing now, you know, people want to act like sports are brain surgery. It's not. What's happened in college basketball the last few years, you're seeing the effect of all these high school players going directly to the NBA. You think about it. LeBron James, Amari Stoudemire, Carmelo Anthony, Dwight Howard, mm-hmm. all these guys should still be in college. And if these guys were in college, those big schools would still be kicking these little schools' butt. But what
exactly.
has happened is, what you're seeing a residual effect, because, you know, I think Amari was going to go to Memphis. And let me tell you something. If Memphis had Amari Stoudemire, they would have beat UCLA, okay? Mm-hmm. But, you know, so what it is, it's become more of a level playing field because sports are dictated by stars. Stars, they make your team great. All players in sports are good. Every player in the NBA can play. But, guys, superstars are really big stars. They make your team great. So now all these, in the last, you know, 5 years, we've had all these great, great players skip college. So they would have created a balance of power for those big schools. And that's the only difference. The only difference why George Mason is in the NCAA Final Four is Amari Stoudemire is not at Memphis. LeBron James is not at a college. Dwight Howard, Carmelo Anthony. So people want to act like they just, I love seeing these guys try to act like, well, this is a great underdog story. Those guys can play.
Yeah.
But if these guys who we got in the NBA, which I'm first of all I'm against, I want all these kids to go to college. Because everybody looks at Kobe, LeBron, Kevin Garnett, but the truth of the matter is majority of these kids are not making it in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And they screwed the thing up. They should have made it 20.
I agree.
Because now kids are all going to sit out a year in high school, go overseas, or go to prep school. They should have made it 20. Would at least have to go to college for 2 years. But I love watching all these guys on TV who think they know about basketball talking about, well, this is what happened. The only thing that happened is some great players went directly to the NBA in the last 5 to 7 years and took away the difference because, hey, there's no difference between UCLA, Memphis, Kansas, except one great player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tell me, George Mason wouldn't have beat UConn if the kid who the Lakers drafted number one this year, he was supposed to be at UConn. I think his name was Andrew Bynum. The Lakers drafted him in the first round. If he had been at UConn, they probably would have beat George Mason. If Amari had been at Memphis, they definitely would have beat UCLA. But it's just all these guys can play. That's like in the NBA. I tell people, there's no – the only difference between – Miami and, let's say, the Boston Celtics is Shaquille O'Neal. That's the only difference. You know.
Well, listen. We're going to go to a break here, but I can also take it back to, of course, the years of the rise of Lou Alcindor / Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, when John Wooden could attract a man that was clearly the dominant player in the country. You know, think of UCLA's tradition and an 88-game winning streak with Bill Walton. All the tradition depended on one dominant player. I'm right with you on that one. When we come back, Charles, let's talk about that, and also talk about relationships too. You know, the fact that you as the dominant player have to be able to work with the rest of the team. We're talking about Head Games Radio with Charles Barkley, Peter Roby from the Center for the Study of Sport and Society. This is Head Games Radio. It's more than just about sports, but how you get it done, how you face those moments of truth in your own life, not just on the playing field. We'll be right back in just a minute with Sir Charles. Ba-da-ba. Ba-da-ba.